Welcome, everybody, to what's new in UI UX for Universal Windows Apps. And my name is Joe Stegman. I'll be your guide, if you will, for the next hour. In case you're wondering, I run the program management team for the accessibility platform for Windows and the tools team, accessibility tools team, as well as the I run the program management team for the Windows UI platform, which is XAML. And as such, I'll be spending a lot of cycles showing new XAML features, but that won't be the only thing that I do. I'll show some things outside the bounds of that. I've got a full hour, and I'm not actually starting out with questions that you get to ask me. You may get to do that later. But I have some questions for you, and I just realized, you know what, I can't see, but I'll do my best. So hopefully everybody saw the keynote today. And so one thing is that'll help us sort of plan how we might invest in the future is how many people are either actively doing something with Xamarin or expect to do something with Xamarin in the next year, by show of hands. Okay, I don't know, maybe third, fourth, something like that. Same question for Centennial or the Windows Desktop Bridge, however you want to look at that, the converter, desktop converter, how many people are either doing something with bringing Win32? Okay, a lot less. And then the last one is the iOS bridge that we talked about last year. Is anybody planning on? I see a hand. I'm not being sarcastic. Serious, or am I? I don't know. Sarcasm may kick up or go down depending on how the session goes. Okay, with that, I do have a lot to talk about. In the past, usually there's one or two cornerstone features that I talk about and spend the majority of my time on. This time around, we did more gap filling and did some customer pain point type stuff. So I'll spend more time or less time on more features, if you will. So it's more like eating at a buffet rather than eating one big entree. You'll have a little snacking of a bunch of little things. A couple big things we did do was we did UWAs, if you will, on, or UWPs on UWAs on Xbox One. There's a session that talks about tailoring for that, so I'll kind of give you the high level what you need to know. And then there's a session on beautiful UX that I just can't get enough of, delivered by two beautiful people, and I'm going to keep using that joke until I show their pictures, that I'll give you a little heads up or give you an overview of kind of what we've done there and then send you off to the other session for more details. So with that, I'm just going to kick right into a demo, and I just got to figure out which box it's on. There we go. So what do I have here? That's right, we're going to kick right into a demo. I have not the current version of Visual Studio installed, but the next one that's called, I think, Dev 15. Anyway, it's a short name. It's like, anyway, it's confusing for me. But I'm running the next version that will support the Edit and Continue feature. And I'm going to demonstrate some new features with that. So if people are wondering what Edit and Continue is that me doing that? There we go. As I type, wow, that's loud. The other day I was hanging out with my daughter and I was sending an email and she said, "Dad, you are the worst typist ever." She said that and some combination of, and the least accurate. So that's what you're getting to deal with right now. Asset slash, let's see, what can we do here? How about hug.gif? So the app is running on the right. It's that white thing. There you, oh, beautiful. Yeah. So, animated GIFs in the platform. I'm glad. Thank you, Tim Heuer, for pointing that my direction, because this is what I was going with. There's so many funny things that you can do with animated GIFs, but I'm Microsoft, so I can only show things that we have licensed. And maybe we didn't license the first one, but don't tell anybody. And so this is about the best that I've got for us licensing it. So let's do stretch equals none. And there we go, small thing now. So let's continue with the edit and continue. So you can see as I'm typing, I'm not saving, I'm not doing anything. I'm just typing and I'm getting a live preview of what I'm actually doing. Content equals make, boy, I am the worst typer. This will be, I'll limit my typing here. There we go, make it rain, perfect, but I kind of want that to be maybe in a stack panel to make it a little better. I'm going to do a full app just like this for you guys because it will be painful for you as well as me. So let's put it in a stack panel. And look, I can just do that. That's awesome. What else do I want to do? Oh, my no worries. because if we're going to make it rain, let's provide some rain in there. That would be awesome. And then let's make font size. Nope, not. Geez, you see what this is what she's talking about. I see it right here. Font size equals 30. Margin equals maybe 30. What else can we do? Horizontal alignment. You get the idea. Center. And it's starting to look really good. It's not quite polished yet. I think as a designer, I really need background equals black. Perfect. Well, beige. Jeez. She's smiling somewhere at me. Oh, my God. Okay. BL. There we go. IntelliSense, help me out. Okay. Where'd my button go? It's okay. I think I've got this. I'm a professional. Let's set, you're going more typing from this guy? Jeez, foreground, white. There we go, make it rain. Crap. So what I need to do is I need to like set the pointer over color on button. That's what I need to do. I think I got a retemplate. So, XAML experts in the house, anybody help me out? Yeah, never mind. We're gonna go back to slides. And then I'll talk a little bit about what we're doing. Let's see, hit five. This is the dance that I can't practice until I get up here. There we go, clicker, I'm on it, okay. So, that's not me. It's good. Hello, Bueller, slides, I'm on the right one. Support. I insulted him beforehand, so this is how they get back at me. Anybody? Is there a guy in black back there that's on it? Helping me out with my slides? Oh, here comes the person, sorry. Yes, that's my feeling too. Five. Okay, so, yes, you're now getting a presentation from this guy. So let's see if I can advance it correctly. There we go. So if you can remember, I was having problems with pointer over and being able to change the button color. So what's kind of going on here? Well, first of all, you have to know that, and by the way, we did a few features that are for kind of people who spend a lot of time in XAML to make their life a little more productive. And this is kind of one of those, is that XAML controls today, in the control definition, as people may know, generic.xaml, we have colors defined for things like, for example, button, the foreground button pointer over color, and the button background pointer over color. Those are actually defined in the definition of the control, and those themselves map to like 80 system colors. And the nice thing about that is that if we want to re-theme like a light and dark theme or a high contrast theme, we as the XAML team just have to change those 80 colors and everything lights up. The thing is you go, okay, so what I need to do to fix my problem to change the pointer over color there, the highlight color, and by the way, there's not a property on button to do that, is I just got to change the system base high color, which I know to do that. But the problem is that there's like 12 other controls in XAML that use that system base high color. So if I were to do that, after I figured this out, to change that system high color, I would find out that I had 12 other controls that randomly change color as well. So what we've done is we've added a layer of indirection. So now button itself, for its pointer over, has a pointer over foreground color that then maps to the system color. So I can still change 80 colors to theme, and I can now just change the pointer over color if I want to solve my problem here. So let's go back and try not to create another problem. Number seven. Let's go see if I can solve the problem now. Okay, so one other thing I want to do is so that you don't have to continue watching me type, I'm going to get rid of that, and I'm going to drag in some code that's close, but not quite the same as what I just did, and I'll drag in some other code down below, and I'll explain this and go back into edit and continue. So the only difference in the top code that I did was, make it a little bigger, is rather than just use an image, I used a bitmap image, and the reason is because with animated GIFs, which is what I'm showing, I can actually set it to play, not to autoplay. Which would hence be why I named my button Let It Rain, because when I click it, it's going to rain. So just remember I made it rain. I haven't done it yet, but I will. So I'm going to go ahead and run this app, and then I'll explain the app bar in just a minute. So here's my running app, and so I still have that problem. So I'm going to go over into app.xaml. What I did is I pre-brought in the into my app.xaml. I pre-pulled in those colors that I just talked about. And now let's go ahead, and the app is running, and let's just see if we can go green and yellow. And if I would have picked a color, a better color here, or one that was visible right off the bat, you'd see they're actually changing, but I'll show you. So now we'll go yellow. Haven't saved, and there you go. So changing, so I changed the resource, and now it's super easy to change the theme color of the button. And if you're curious, I can, yes, I can go ahead and I can make it rain to start the animated GIF. So this is about making it easier for developers to kind of be able to style and template their controls. And I'll come back to the app bar, but one thing I do want to show is one additional thing, and these are really just the first couple that I'm showing here are really geared towards sort of people who spend a lot of time in XAML. Those are theme resources, and I did them at an app level, but I can come around and I can define those same theme resources, and let's go purple, and yellow is good enough, and I'm going to rerun the app. For those changes, I actually had to restart the app, but I can now override theme resources actually on a per app level, so let's try that again. And now you can see it's now purple and yellow. So it's super easy for developers to now get the branding they want, even in their own, in a given page, which was harder than before. So the next thing I want to talk about is this app bar down here. And you'll notice there's a couple new properties, or you may not, but there's a new property on app bar called default label position. So right now it's bottom, but let's change it to right. And it automatically changes to right. And one other thing you'll notice is, so you can do right positioning. Let's resize. So I'm going to resize. And as you notice, as I resize, I don't know if you noticed the more button kind of went away. So we do a couple things here. Is we auto overflow without you having to do anything as a developer. I know it seems like we should have done that before, but we've done it now. So, you get the auto overflow capability, and we automatically hide the dot, dot, dot button if you don't need it. You can turn it on all the time. You can turn it off all the time. But in general, anyway, just a few productivity things we've done. And with that, I'm going to try this again and go back to 5. Go back to 5. There we go. It worked. Yay. Okay. So continuing on. So I already went back to the live demo. So I explained animated GIF. So the command bar. The main thing is that I showed you that we can do the overflow, but just to let everybody know, we have events that tell you when something's getting thrown into overflow. You have priorities, so you can determine which gets dropped out first. It's got all the bells and whistles that anybody could ask for, I think. And in addition, we have the same thing on sort of the more button, is that you can always turn it on. You can have it auto, which means it's on when you need it. And default label positions can be changed on a global basis or on an individual basis. So with that, let's go talk about UWAs on Xbox. And out of everything I prepped, this here was sort of one of the most difficult, because there's a lot to talk about here. How many people either have built a UWA on Xbox, or actively working on it, or expect to in the next year? All right, so that's a lot, nearly as many as the Xamarin. So there's really actually a lot to cover here from the perspective of what it takes to sort of tailor your app on Xbox. And what I want to cover is there's a couple things that I really want to focus on, is that we've made our controls. If you heard this morning the keynote, the controls work with Gamepad. The APIs, we basically have a universal platform, so the API set is pretty much the same on Xbox as what you'll get everywhere else. And so that should mean high five. I build my app, I run it, and it works on Xbox. And for the most part, that is the case. However, there are some considerations that you will have to think about if you're moving your experience to Xbox. And there's a talk tomorrow at 5, which will go into details, but there's things like TV safe zones that you have to worry about, the scale factor is bigger, those sorts of things. But probably the biggest thing is dealing with Gamepad, and even though we've wired into controls, there's still some things you have to think about. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to show you some of the details. I think I do jump into the demo here, and I'm going to go to a different box. I'm just going to show you Gamepad. Now this is, as you heard this morning, the keynote, Gamepad works on PC, so I'm going to run this app because it's a great way to test. There are a couple things you should be aware about, though, when I'm testing with Gamepad. By the way, this app is super simple. point it to a folder, it displays a bunch of images, and allows you to edit the metadata, which is the title and tags of the app. It's not optimized in any way for Xbox, it's not optimized in any way for mouse and keyboard per se. I do one thing with the escape key, but otherwise there's nothing special in this app whatsoever. What I have done, because I did a sound check and I just realized I didn't turn it off, is I've enabled sounds, is the only thing I've done. So since we have a consistent platform across desktop and across phone and Xbox, the sounds that you get, we basically baked in Xbox sounds into our control. So as you move focus, as you select an item, as you dismiss an item, you get sounds. And by default, the setting for sounds in your app is set to auto, and auto means play sounds with controls on Xbox and don't play them on desktop. But what I've done is I've turned them on just so you can see what the experience is like. And as I mentioned, the PC is a good place to actually test your gamepad experience, and I'm going to show you why you actually need to test here, but you also need to test on Xbox itself. There are a couple things that work slightly different with gamepad that you should be aware of. If you're going to a text box, for example, if you're on Xbox, for text entry, they have their own secondary input that pops up for doing text entry, so that's different. And there's an interaction mode called mouse mode, which I'll explain in a little bit, that doesn't work on desktop. But otherwise, the experience is, if I go to an item, the equivalent of click is A, and B is the equivalent of basically cancel or back. And so it's this, you don't have to do anything to sort of get that experience. It's the same experience you'd get with touch or with your keyboard. In addition, we've done some wire up with, there's a menu button on here, and if I hit the menu button, it invokes a context menu consistently. So those are kind of the easy ones. And directional nav, which is what I'm doing now, I'm just moving the gamepad around. Directional nav kind of works the way you would expect it. However, there are three things that you need to be aware of with directional nav. And at a high level, directional nav, when you move the gamepad controller, if you move it down, we kind of look in a cone. The framework looks in a cone down and says, is there any focusable controls? And if so, we move focus to that control. And that's sort of implicit and baked into the platform. However, it is possible that you as a developer can create UI where not everything is reachable from gamepad. And if you're building experiences today, you can rely on, I can move my mouse and I can click, or I can touch the thing I want. But if you have gamepad, you have to be able to navigate there. And so here I have a list of photos, and luckily it's not a super long list, but I want to get down to the bottom to my command bar. So any day now. So you can see it took a while to get down there. So it was kind of cumbersome. But imagine if I had a Pinterest-style app that had an infinite list. If I did that, I'm stuck here all day. No matter how much I keep hitting down, I'm just getting more photos. I'm not getting to my commands. So one of the things you have to be aware of with gamepad is you have to make sure your UI is reachable. Now, the other thing is that if you see I'm now on tag, one thing that we've done too is that focus visual you see there, you go, is that a gamepad thing? No, it's not. It's a new focus visual that I'll talk about some knobs we have on that focus visual, but it's a new focus visual that we have now that's consistent across all our platforms. But primarily it was driven by the work we need to do for gamepad, because with gamepad it's important to know where you are, and it's because that's how you figure out where you're going. And sound is another important aspect of that, because you need to know if you kind of did something really happen, and sound helps with that. And with a 10-foot lean back controller experience, it just turns out that's important. So anyway, what I wanted to show you is I'm going to move over to the right. I'm now on this slider. Now I'm going to hit right again. Do I move the slider or do I go to the apply button? Which one? In this case, I'm going to move. Uh-oh. So how do I get to the apply button? So there are some cases where, like in this case of the slider, where you need to be able to say whether or not you actually want to engage the control and use the thumbstick to control the control itself, or whether you want to just treat it as one big, if you will, one big control. And so one of the things that you have to be aware of is this concept of engagement model. And effectively, what we'll do on the slider that you see down here is it'll have an engagement model where we as a platform will opt into it. But if you're building your own controls or experiences, you'll have to do something similar, which is I tab that thing and I can say, oh, by the way, you have to hit A. So in this case, I would move into the slider. I hit A. A says, now I'm ready to move the slider value. And then I hit B, and B says, now I'm ready to tab on to the next item, and now my thumbstick works like a normal thumbstick again that tabs around. And I could do the same thing for my big list. I haven't done it here, but I could annotate the whole thing as requires engagement, and then it would be one big focusable item until I hit A, and then I could actually tab the individual items. Now, we can't predict that for you. We don't know what experience you want for lists. Do you want it to be individually focusable, or do you want it to be a big item that you have to sort of select to tab into? So this is why it requires some work on a developer to think about their experience and to make sure it is going to work with Gamepad. The last thing you'll need to be aware of is if you make heavy use of gestures, panning, zooming, pinch to zoom, there's only so many knobs on this thing. And while we can provide guidance of how to map that, in general, you'll find that it's probably not super discoverable by end users. So you probably need alternate UX or affordance if you're doing a lot of gestures, if you will, in your app. So with that, I'm going to jump back to number 5 here. And there's a talk tomorrow that Paul Gusmarino and Nick Kramer are giving that'll go into details, more details of how do you actually tailor, not just for Gamepad, but how do you deal with TV safe colors and TV safe zones and that sort of thing. So you saw those high focus indicators, as we call them, high visibility focus indicators. That is the default. Some people like them. Some people may say, "Yeah." So we provide all kinds of knobs on a per control basis, and I'll talk about one global one. You can control how thick they are. If you think they're too thick by default, you can control. There's actually two color controls you can do on the high focus visuals. You can specify whether they're on the outside of your control, like button, or on the inside of your control, like a combo box item. So tons of knobs. These are not part of your template. These are implicitly drawn by the framework on behalf of the developer. And then if you don't like them and you go, "Hey, I like those little dotted lines," you can always go back to the dotted lines. If you upgrade your app to the new, what are we calling this thing, the anniversary update, if you target the anniversary update, you will get these new high visibility focus recs. So the sounds that I showed, the sounds by default, the mode for sounds is auto, which as I mentioned means they play on Xbox, and all our controls have them for when they take focus, those sorts of things. You can turn them on if you want for your experience on PC by setting it to on, which is what I did for that demo for testing purposes. You also, if you're a developer and you're building an app that's going to be on Xbox and you have your own custom experiences, we have 7 sounds that are built into the platform, and you can play any one of those. So if you yourself are popping something up, you can play the sounds to be able to do that same pop-up sound that we did, which is the show and hide sounds. The one thing is that you can turn these sounds off on a per-control basis if you want for the built-in controls. Today, we don't yet have a mechanism by which you can override and do your own sounds. You can just turn them off. You can call the same APIs we call, low-level APIs, to write your own sounds, but we didn't yet have an extensibility mechanism by which you could play sounds. You may not realize it, but focus isn't one sound. It's like 5 sounds that you cycle through. The sounds are much more complex than you might imagine. But anyway, just for now, that's a current limitation. I mentioned the engagement modes that you can annotate your controls with, which is basically, does the engagement mode, does it require engagement, which is you have to hit A to interact with it. One other engagement mode we have is called a pointer or cursor engagement mode, which I think they'll give a demo of tomorrow. There are some experiences, let's say you're hosting a web page and you can't change the content and you can't make it work great for controller, then in that case what you can do is you can say it's basically a pointer engagement. And when you engage with that control, and you can even do it on a page basis and even on an app basis, when you engage with that thing, your thumbstick actually starts to move a virtual cursor, and then you just hit A to kind of click. So it basically is like a virtual mouse, if you will. And if you've played with Xbox, the web browser on Xbox, this is kind of the way it works. So we have those for controlling engagement. We have knobs that allow you to say, for this control, when I move up, here's the control I want to go to if you want finer control over how the gamepad navigation works. And we have this new visual affordance smoke, which maybe if I come back to you later, I'll show. But anytime a flyout pops up, you have the ability to turn on the back, kind of gets gray. And it's important in the 10-foot lean back experiences, but you might yourself, I kind of actually like it. And I originally had it turned on in this demo. You might want to use that for all your flyouts just because it makes it really clear something popped up and you need to engage with the thing that popped up. And then, I think that's it. I'm going to get on to more demos. So this will be the same. effective project only, optimized slightly different to show off a set of different features. So as I said, this same app, but I've set it up so that it's easy for me to show a couple of other new features. So I'm just running it. There's nothing up my sleeve here. What I will explain is that with this app, I'm hitting tab, I can tab around and it shows me the time it was taken. Sorry about that. Hopefully that'll be my last mistake. Otherwise, someone will replace me. It's the way it works at Microsoft. So I can tab around, the information at the bottom updates. This is an app that allows me to, effectively, I can edit the caption if I want, or I can tag people in the photo. That's effectively all it is. What I can't do right now is I can't right-click and do that, which is what I want to do. And I mentioned, right now, if you want to right-click or press and hold and work well with drag and drop, it's kind of hard to get it exactly right. So we finally just went and added something called a context flyout. And if you have a context flyout, then it's just implicit. We just handle right-click, Xbox menu key, it all just works. I just added 3 menu items. This is my data template, so each of those images. Now we'll get a context menu, and I wired them up to the same event handlers I happen to have that I happen to be using down below. But main thing is just to show you it's super simple to be able to add context menu in a consistent way in your app experience now. So I can come in and go ahead and right-click, and it just is invoked. As a developer, I now no longer have to write code. So we've done a set of things to kind of make it so it's easier for you to build apps that are easier for end users to be a little more productive with them, and especially in desktop scenarios. And so this next one I'll show you is similar to that. And I'm going to go down to my commands at the bottom, and I'm going to go ahead and add an access key. And I'm going to say O, and I'm going to add an access key E. That's all I did. There's no other magic, and I'll explain what this is, but this one, there's no magic here. I haven't pre-canned anything. And what this does is just, there's some people who, and our data shows that especially for desktop apps, people love keyboard, and they love keyboard shortcuts. So by adding E is what I did for edit caption, I now can hit Alt-E and nothing more, and it just invokes that command. And if I had a command on there, it would have just invoked it. So super easy for you to add keyboard shortcuts to the app experience. And if I go ahead and do this for access key equals C and access key equals T, and it's access key for the slideshow equals S. There's one more I want to show. I have a text box up at the top here, which is how I filter, and I'm going to do access key equals F. One thing here, though, is that you'll notice I have this accepts return, not what I wanted, access key equals F. To try to make the demo a little simpler, it's got this access key invoked handler here that I already wired up. And what does it mean when I hit an access key on a text box? We don't necessarily know. Maybe it's that you want to give it focus. But that event, what it says is that an access key was invoked on this item. What do you want to do? And for buttons and stuff, it'll just invoke the command. For text box, it doesn't. And so in this case, I said, when I hit that access key, I really just want to give it focus. And so that's what will happen here. But while I'm showing you stuff, let's go ahead and just complete the demo. One thing you'll notice is that when I hit the Alt key, you didn't know what I was doing. I had to say I was hitting the Alt key, and it's probably not very discoverable. So that's where these other parameters come in, which I will copy to make it super simple and paste. And what these do is they say, oh, by the way, someone is entering an access key sequence. Do you want to display UI? That's what the first one does. And the second one says they X'd the access key sequence, or the mnemonics is what people know them on desktop. And do you want to dismiss your UI? And so I've also already created the event handlers. But what I didn't do for that is I just created a tooltip on the requested. I show the mnemonic that I get from the command. And this, I will now just show the tooltip. So let's go put the whole thing together, and you'll see the kind of experience with, really, it's not a lot of code, but it adds a lot of productivity to your app. So now I can hit Alt, and there you go, access keys. And if I were to, for example, Let's tab into the list box, Alt F, and I can move focus to filter. I hit Alt and T, and I don't even have to hit Alt. I'm hitting Alt space or Alt waiting and hitting T. I can just hit the command Alt T, and it'll just take me to tag the item, for example. So that's fun and interesting, but let's talk about something that probably most people in here, given your XAML folks, that you probably have a little bit more passion around, and that's data binding. And specifically, I'm going to talk about some of the stuff that we've done in improving our data binding model. So one thing when I ran the app, and you notice I have this, I'm showing the date taken down here, and I'm not really happy with it. It says 11001, and then it switches to 630, and it just looks real, that doesn't look good. It's not beautiful. Not that I could make it beautiful, but I'd like to format that. And the way that's getting displayed is it's this text block here, and it's showing the selected value is basically the image, if you will, and it's got date taken, tags, title, that sort of thing. But you know what I'd like to do is, how can I make it prettier? I'd like to, be nice if I could just two-string it with a D and maybe X colon null for the second argument. It'd be nice if I could just do that and that it hooked change notification to reevaluate this every time date taken or selected value updated. So it'd be really cool if that worked. Let's just cross our fingers and hope those squiggles are at, oh, what on earth have I done? Oh. There we go. Okay, who's coming up to replace me? What's gonna happen right now? X colon what have I? Comma, and X colon null. Am I missing? Oh, paren. Who said that? Thank you. Nope, other side. Jeez. You know, I actually have run through these before. I know it's shocking. I just put it down to, okay, what did I do? Selected value, blah, blah, blah. Oh, now am I good? Backspace? No. Jeez. Gosh. It's so much easier when I, hey, maybe it'll work. This is how I make my demos more impactful. You help me struggle. Okay, there we go. I call the function in data binding. Kind of cool. Yes. Sorry, it was so bad. I still don't like it. I would like to put more in there. So to save you from all this pain, I'm just going to copy this right here, without making any mistakes. And I'm going to paste it right here. And what I've done here is now I have a method. And the method itself takes those two arguments, a title and a string, and it does some more fancy formatting. Now, the key thing here, and what's super important about this, is that change notification is hooked on all of these items and on all of these items. So if my tags changes, I get this reevaluated. If the title changes, it gets reevaluated. If selected value changes, it gets reevaluated. So it really is super powerful for doing multi-binding scenarios, for doing conversion type scenarios. And so now, as I tab in, you'll see down at the bottom there, you'll see that everything changes. And if I actually come in and, for example, clear the tag, if I clear the tag, I gotta go clear my data model, fire property change, and you notice tags went to blank. If I go ahead and add a tag and put Lori back in, and all through the magic of that, just hooking change notification, yes, it's cool. We're super excited about this, and we think people will love it. A couple other nuggets that are buried in here. I have in my app here, and sorry, I should have showed you before I ran it again. When I click on an item, I go into flip view, and I hit escape, and I go out of the flip view. So I'm basically setting visibility on, I'm hiding the grid view in the background when I click, and then I'm showing visibility to visible on the flip view. And when I hit escape, I'm hiding the flip view and showing the grid view again. Now, the way I'm doing that is I have a property on my model that's basically a Boolean value, and I'm binding visibility to Boolean. Now, has anybody in here actually done that before? Yeah, a few times. So just because we like to be the party late and not very good, this is a line of code that I have that actually does my Boolean to visibility converter, and I'm just going to get rid of the converter right now. I'm going to take this advantage of a bug that we have to show you one other feature that you can now do coercion as well with X colon bind. So what did I just do? This is a Boolean property. I'm binding it to visibility. I don't need a converter anymore. Yay. And then VISI. Someone's waiting for me to fail, aren't they? You guys are just, someone's already got sights on coming up here and finishing this talk. So run it again, and of course, it'll just work. So one of those little things that we decided to do. There you go. And then also one other thing, since I'm in here talking about X colon bind features, we've done a set of other things that I've got a slide that covers. Is checked. I'm also binding to the same thing, which is a Boolean value. Is checked, if you don't know, is a tri-state. It's a bool question mark. And we also do the same thing. We now work with bool question mark, where we can handle the different states without you having to write a converter. So we think the combination of some of the implicit type conversion we've added and the function bindings are going to be super powerful, and that as developers, you'll figure out all kinds of wonderful stuff to do with that. So with that, let me go back to slides. So I mentioned the context menu. I showed actually just hooking up in the context menu. I showed using the context flyout, but we have events too, that if you are, like, for example, you're creating your own context flyout on the fly or context menu on the fly, you can just use our context requested event. There's a cancel that lets you know it was canceled. This all works great with drag and drop. It works for mouse touch and gamepad. So we think that'll be nice. I showed you the access keys. What I didn't tell you is that you can do scopes with access keys. So if you have different pages that use the same access keys, you can have scopes within there, and whatever is the currently focused scope, only those access keys display. So tons of features here. There's global hooks to figure out when an access key is displayed. It will also work, not yet, but it will work with our component UI stuff that we're doing, which is our cross-proc hosting of UI. So you can basically host Edge out of proc in your XAML app, and you'd be able to have access keys that work seamlessly between those. So lots of good stuff here. The one thing I want to mention about compiled bindings is compiled bindings is actually only available if you're targeting the features I showed today. You can only use if you're targeting the latest version of the SDK. So what that means is that in order to get those features, you have to set the min version of your app that you're targeting to the, whatever we call it, the anniversary edition, unfortunately, to get those new features. We don't allow you to light up the compiled binding stuff that we've done. I covered the first, which is kind of the multi-binding scenario. The second one I didn't show, but you can also index into dictionaries now with compiled bindings, which is kind of cool. And I showed you can do the casts. And the casts are kind of nice if you're binding to like a grid view that has a selected item that's an object. You can now cast it to something specific and either pass it into a function or bind it to something else. So super powerful stuff. The implicit bindings that I mentioned for bool divisibility are going to work for both compiled bindings and classic binding, as we call it now. So I want to move on to animation and effects. And again, I'm going to just jump into, actually, I won't jump into a demo. I'll first do a couple slides. So the way the XAML framework is built is it's built on top of what we call a visual layer, or the composition system. And that's in turn built on top of the graphics layer. And we've, collectively, Microsoft has done a ton of improvements in the visual layer. And they've things like effects, which are being able to do a blur, a drop shadow, being able to tie a blur to a motion, which Kevin kind of showed this morning in his demo. We have a lot of animation capabilities that are also plumbed through at the visual layer. And XAML sits on top of that. Now, the trick is for us to actually wire up XAML, if you will, in a natural way to take advantage of those visual capabilities. And while the visual capabilities do exist today and they're super healthy, we just don't have them fully plumbed up all the way through the XAML layer. But what we did do is we made it such that you could take your XAML UI, if you will, get the visual that backs that UI, and then you could take advantage of the new capabilities, like a blur. So we don't have a XAML grid, or we don't have a property yet on our controls that says blur, blur factor. We will. Instead, you have to take the control, ask for the backing visual, if you will, and then apply a blur to the backing visual. There's a talk tomorrow by two beautiful people that are going to go into the visual layer in detail. However, I wanted to show you kind of how these things play together and kind of some of the power of the visual layer and how easy it is to integrate the visual layer into your app. I'm going to get it right this time. So same experience except for one slight difference. It's the same app, and I'll go ahead and run it. And the one difference this time is in no way, shape, or form is this a hint to what I'm about to do. You'll notice that if I click on the context menu that I've wired up, it's bigger. It has nothing to do, really, with what I'm about to show you. So I mentioned we have effects. And what I've done is, in my constructor, I just call this setup animations and effects, and to not have to drag in code, because if you've seen, I can even mess that up. So I'm pretty good at uncommenting. So setup effects, what does that do? And let's go take a look at that. And what I want to do is I want to apply a blur. And so if I go uncomment that code, this is setup effects. The one thing you will see above here is the compositor is kind of the thing. It's the system compositor that kind of manages the visuals, if you will. And XAML sits on top of that. And if XAML wants to draw to a surface or a visual, if you will, it gets a visual from the system compositor. So I got a handle to the compositor. But otherwise, I'm creating the setup effects. All it does is it creates a Gaussian blur. The Gaussian blur is, we have a Win2D library that is basically a wrapper on D2D. And that Win2D library plays nicely with the visual layer, and that comes from the Win2D. So I basically got a NuGet reference to that. So I create a Gaussian blur, and all I'm doing here is I'm creating a brush, if you will, and I'm associating the Gaussian blur with the brush, and I'm handing it over to the compositor. That's all that's doing. So what have I done? I've just created a brush that if I draw something with it, it's going to create a blur. That's it. And that's all this code right here. No more magic. And by the way, I did actually... Kevin probably didn't write the code this morning. I actually wrote this, so if it looks bad or crappy, it's because of me. So now I hook, which this right here is not really a hack, but now I have a context menu in here and a couple flyouts, and I hook a menu flyout opened, and on the slideshow flip view, I hook a size changed, but I'll only show you one of these just to give you an idea of what it's doing. So in the context menu opened, all that does is add a blur effect and unadd that event handler, so it only does it once. So what does that add blur effect do? And it really, there's not much to this. The add blur effect creates a visual. So I mentioned that we have the compositor, it creates these visuals. Then all this is doing is it's looking for a place to put the visual into the tree. It basically wants to put it in a background somewhere, but it's not super important. I create a rectangle, and I make the rectangle transparent. It's a XAML rectangle. I associate the visual with the rectangle. And the reason I do that is because XAML allows you to put visuals in, or rectangles into the tree, but not visuals. But by attaching that visual to the rectangle, now wherever I put that visual, you're going to see wherever I put that rectangle in the tree, the XAML tree, if you will, that visual I created will be attached to it. And for that visual, I say, hey, please paint it with that blurred brush that I created, which is what I do right here. So I've created a blurred visual, and I've attach it to a rectangle, and now I can put that rectangle anywhere in the XAML tree, and anything behind it will be blurred. That's it. That's the magic. And so by doing that, I can now do such interesting things as, if I right-click, now you see I got a blurred background, and it's super easy to do. You may go, that's kind of, yes, yay, woo, blur. So happy. But I could edit the caption too, and I made that all blurred because I went all blur crazy. And the flip view, when I pop up the flip view, the other thing I did is I made the background all blur crazy because blur's like cowbell. I mean, who doesn't want more of that? I do. So blur, super easy. Go see the beautiful people tomorrow for more information on effects. But the other thing is, and this time I'm going to remember not to close the window. I'm going to resize. And when I resize, Lori is up here on the upper right, and if I resize, you'll notice she goes down here, and it's kind of abrupt. Boom, boom. Now, the issue here is that in XAML, our animations are explicit, and what I mean by explicit is you know you're going to do something, and because you know you're going to do something, you know where you're going to move something to. So you say, hey, someone click that button, and when they click that button, I want to move this thing from here to here, but you know ahead of time where it's going. In this case, the thing just moved on me, and what I'd really like to do is have some way to say, by the way, I know XAML layout's going to move it somewhere. Can you just let me put an animation in there to move it from wherever it was to wherever it's to? And the visuals actually allow us to do that. And since these are backed by visuals, I can hook in at the visual layer and say, by the way, anytime you move one of those visuals, please just don't straight away move it. Do my animation to move it. And so similar to what I showed you before, it really isn't that hard to do this. So I'm going to uncomment out setup implicit animations. And for this, I'm going to go, I passed it. It's right here. It's really pretty straightforward. All I'm doing is I'm cycling through that grid view, which is the list of images, and I'm getting all the grid view items, if you will, all the images in that list. And for those images, I'm actually grabbing the visual that backs them. And then, it's really this straightforward, then all I say is I create an animation, and I say, by the way, anytime this thing moves, and the key at the visual layer is offset, means it moves, the offset changes. It says, anytime offset changes, can you please animate over 0.8 seconds this animation from where it was to where it's going? That's it. And so this happens implicitly. So I grab those backing visuals for all that UI, and I said, don't ever move them abruptly. Move them with this curve. And there's a bunch of things that you can do to define the curves. So with that little piece of magic, I can now do the following. So now when Lori moves, now you get that effect. And it works if I search for Noah, and you see that effect applies to everything in the list. So super powerful and actually fairly easy to do. And with that, I'm going to kick back to let's see, I got 13 minutes here, so I've got a few remaining slides, and that's it. So here's the beautiful people I was talking about, James and Tim. They gave me this slide. I didn't actually search them out to put their picture in, but they're going into details about this tomorrow, and they'll talk a lot more about the power of the visual layer, the animation and effects system. So that's not all we did. We actually we did a tree view. I actually have a sample of it up here and running, which I won't show you, but it's a tree view. This is what's used in the Edge favorite pane. It's one of those things where we got this close to productizing it, but it was so good, we didn't feel 100% ready to put it in the platform, so we just made it available as a sample. So it does drag, drop, expanding, collapsing, fully configurable, fully accessible. It goes to 11, effectively. And we know we've had a lot of requests for tree view. We have, type ahead combo box. It just implicitly works. You build your app with a combo box in it. You recompile your app for the next version of Windows, the anniversary edition, and you just implicitly get type ahead combo box. If you don't like it, you can turn it off by saying is text search enabled equals false. But the default thing is it now works. I have a demo of this too. And by the way, it works in a smart way. It cycles through, like if you have a bunch of A's and you hit A slowly, it cycles through the A's. If you type fastly, it tries to match characters in words. We did a new Windows Ink control, and there's a session here. It was in the keynote, and there's a session that talks about this in detail. You just plop it in your XAML app, and especially on a Surface Pro device like this, and you're ready to roll. You get your tool, all the magic they showed this morning, you get. We have a new media player element and a new media player, and one thing this does is it allows you to more easily disconnect your UI from your media playback, and so it makes it a lot easier to write single process video apps, if you will. Also, the new media player automatically attaches to the system transport controls without you having to write any code. So anyway, from a developer perspective, you'll find if you spend a lot of time with the media element, you'll find that this works much better. It's much more straightforward than what you might have had before. I haven't shown any mobile stuff. Everything I'm doing here would work on mobile. One feature that we did specifically for mobile, just because we had a lot of requests, was allow you to create like chat type apps where the list is actually inverted, and you can do it with a lot of work today, but it's just basically two lines of code now to create an inverted list. We have an example of that too. And we did other stuff, which was, anyway, listed in here that you can find in my slides. And so with that, call to action, I haven't read the slide yet, but that's the call to action. And then please complete an evaluation. I haven't read the slide either. It's a required slide. People were wondering why I have it in there. It's required. Delete this box when your slide is finalized. Oops. I won't be working at Microsoft tomorrow. I think you guys have already figured that out. Okay, and with that, I've got 9 minutes and 57 seconds. Thank you, everybody, for listening to my talk. And if you have questions, there may be mics.
On gamepad navigation, does that work with any gamepad, or does it have to be an Xbox One controller?
Wow. Could I say it works with the Xbox One remote, too? Does that allow me to answer your question? We've only tried it with this game, but I would guess, I don't know if Nick Kramer is in here, but I would guess it would work with any gamepad. We're not doing anything specific to Xbox. We're just listening to, I will figure that out. If you want to drop off your card, I'll let you know. But I assume it should. I haven't actually tried that. Other questions? And if not, you can come up here. I'll be around for a little while afterwards. Go ahead.
Did you guys make any changes to XBind at all? New properties? New anything?
The X:Bind bind, the stuff that I showed with function bindings was all new functionality with X:Bind bind.
Last I checked, update source trigger was not part of it.
Yes, you're correct.
Still not part of it.
That's correct. Yes. Update source trigger. Yes. It's not that we don't want to.
Hey, the new animation stuff that you showed, how does it differ from the existing storyboards and stuff that we use?
That's a great question. So how does the animation stuff differ? We're stuck in a kind of a weird situation where we have two animation systems. We have the XAML animation system, and we have the new animation system from the visual layer, which is all effectively independent animations. And what we need to do is now plumb through, which is a huge amount of work, which is why it doesn't exist yet. We need to plumb that through into our existing storyboard so that you can coordinate the animations. Right now, you can't. You have our animation system, which is the XAML animation system, and the visual animation system. But they are, if you will, separate. You can't coordinate across those animation systems. We'll fix it in the future. It's just not there now. Go ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned about touch, mouse, and game controller. What about the Kinect sensor?
So for Kinect sensor, Kinect sensor is primarily speech and the gestures that you have in Kinect sensor. If you want to do, we haven't done anything to bake those into the platform. We've been looking at stuff coming from HoloLens, which does have more advanced gestures, but we haven't baked the Kinect sensor gestures yet into the controls. It's something that we've talked about doing, we've investigated doing. It just doesn't exist yet in the platform. You have to do that yourself. Go ahead.
The new media player, does it accept some kind of streaming APIs or only URIs and file descriptors?
That is a great question. You'll have to give me... The media player was done by our media team, and unfortunately, they gave me... I got out this much information, so if you give me your... I'll get you the right contacts, and they'll tell you. They'll tell you whether it can do that or not. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question was as well with the media player element as to, like, what's great about it, what's new about it. You kind of went through it a little quick.
One of the main things that resulted in us doing the media element was that right now, if you wanted, there was a kind of a hard tie between the visual, the media element visual itself, and the playback. And because there was this hard tie back between those two, that if you wanted to do a background app, like on phone, if you want to do that background app and sort of get rid of all your UI, which could be a heavyweight, take a lot of memory, there was no easy way to do that. So this decouples the playback from the player, if you will. And now you can decouple that. And then on some page, you could have reattach it. You can reattach it to a different media element at some point in the future. But it allows you to easily decouple and get rid of that player. And then that media player itself, the lower level piece, can attach directly to the system transport controls too if you decide that you want to use that. It's also more directly layered on top of the underlying media engine, if you will, the new media player is. And so this previously, if we were exposing new capabilities in the media engine, it had to be plumbed up through all the way through the media element control, and this provides a separation that makes it much easier for you as a developer to get the capabilities you need and us as a platform to expose those capabilities.
Does that enable a scenario where like you've got the visual of the video and then the transport control in separate parts of the visual tree?
Yes, yeah, you can do that. Exactly.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
As far as availability for the controls, that's going to be update Visual Studio 2015, update 2?
For this will all be, everything that I showed here today will be in the name that they call the next version of Windows, just was new to me this morning.
Anniversary
Edition. So it's as new to me as probably a lot of people who work at Microsoft. But yes, the Anniversary Edition is when all this stuff will appear.
Oh, okay.
So but it's in flights now for the most part. The stuff that I showed related to tools, where the editing continue, the first stuff, that's in a version of Visual Studio, not the update 2, but the update after that that's called, whatever, Dev 15. It's got the short name, which is due later this year.
So we won't be able to play with it until...
You can play with parts of it now because they're releasing a preview,
okay.
But the full thing won't be available until later on this year.
Awesome. Thank you.
Sure.
Any talks about Xbind for WPF?
Xbind for WPF. I don't know if anybody in the back, Tim, is aware of any Xbind for WPF. I'm not aware of anything there. Yes.
Or the source, is that going to be released?
The source for WPF, I'm not aware
for
of.
For Xbind.
Oh, for Xbind?
Yeah.
No plans currently today to release the source for Xbind. It's just it's not something we couldn't do. It's just generating code. Is all it effectively does.
Yeah,
so it's
that's
a code.
Why I figured it'd be easy enough to release that source and
yeah,
we can port ourselves.
It's actually not a bad idea. So just hadn't thought about it.
Think about it.
Yep, got it. Tim Hewer owns that feature, so he's in the back. Tim, think about that.
One other thing about Xbind, is there a way to do complex expressions or even simple ones? So you showed Boolean to visibility, but there's a lot of times where I do negative Boolean to visibility. Is that supported at all?
That is a great question. Unfortunately, they don't take parameters yet. So if you paid close attention in my sample, I had a negative and a positive. And for the negative, I had to just write a function binding to do the negative. We'll get there. So yes, not yet. You could create a function where you pass in your negative value, if you will, but we just don't have it yet.
Any hope for the image control to support SVG?
SVG, it's something we always talk about. The XAML path is really close to SVG. We have lots of requests for it. One of the things, we're just trying to figure out where the right part of the stack is. The web browser does SVG. So we have SVG implementations already, and you could... I know it's expensive. You could host a web browser control to get your SVG. But if you want to do SVG for icons, so you get scalable icons, which is what we get asked for a lot, we recognize that that's a nice scenario and that path, converting from SVG to path is not always easy and it's not always feasible. So we've talked a lot about it, but we're just trying to figure out where's the right spot of the stack for that to live? Is it a graphics thing? Is it a XAML thing? Is it a graphics thing that XAML picks up? Is it a visual thing? But I have no good answer for it today in terms of it's in or it's definitely planned. It's something we recognize the need for, especially with all the diversity of form factors, and that you want to be able to scale your assets easily, and we realize that's a great format for doing it. I just don't have anything to say today in terms of when we'll have that online.
Any improvements on adaptive triggers or how to handle responsive design as a whole?
For adaptive triggers, I'm trying to think if we did... For the most part, we didn't do a lot of work in adaptive triggers. We spent a lot of time bringing Xbox online and validating that we could use that with the adaptive trigger work, but we didn't add anything new for adaptive triggers. I'm trying to think. It feels like there's something in there, but nothing is... No, I don't think we did, actually. Sorry. Nothing for adaptive triggers.
One more about the media player. Is there any way now to continue the audio when the app goes into suspension?
Yes. So that's kind of the magic with the media player, is the new thing is that's exactly what it does, is when the app goes into, oh, you want to continue to play audio? Yeah, you can.
When you're playing video, especially streaming.
Oh, you want to separate the streams, and you want to just play the audio stream when you go into the background.
Yeah, especially.
You have to give me your card, and I'll have to get somebody to let you know whether or not that's possible. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't know that one. So I can get you an answer, though.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody.